Okay, so last time we discussed the spontaneity versus the structure of tefillah, and I'd like to first tackle why it is that we need a script, right? Why is it that we need the structure? We said that that tefillah is formulated, is structured based on the karbanos, or because of the avos, and the time of day that the avos daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But why do we need such rigidity? Why do we need a script? So Rabbeinu Bachya provides a very fascinating insight. And you know, all of these are just little nuggets of thoughts that we can take with us as we approach tefillah. And personally, you know, we just have in Maariv, sometimes it just doesn't click. Right? I found myself in the middle of a bracha Shmoneh Esrei, and I thought I was a bracha earlier, and I totally lost my place. But sometimes, you know, some ideal will pop into our head. So if we feel like we're not implementing everything that we're learning the next day, opportunity we have to daven, we shouldn't feel badly about that, because Mirtzah Hashem, Hashem will give us another opportunity tomorrow, and we have another opportunity to say Moda Ani, we have another opportunity to say Brachos, or to daven Shachris, or Mincha, or Maariv, and every opportunity, you know, there are no tefillos that are the same. So Rabbeinu Bachya says as follows, Ki hamilos tehiyena belashon. Right, the words that we use for tefillah, why do we need to use words? We could, you know, just as well think. Hashem can read our minds. Hashem can do anything. He doesn't need to hear us say it out loud. We can say it internally. But there are words. V'hakavana, right, the words come out of our mouths. V'hakavana belave. And the intent, what it means, is emanating from our hearts. So there's a twofold process here that's going on, ideally, in davening, right? Again, sometimes you're on your way to work in the morning, you're at mincha in the middle of the day, and at a bare minimum, you have the time and you have the physical capacity to say it. And the kavana belev is like, that's an aspiration sometimes. But Rabbeinu Bach is talking about, ideally, if we're able to do avoda properly, so this is what it means. The hamilos, so what is the purpose of the words? We open up the script, we open up the sitter, and how is it that the same Shmoneh Esrei that I said a few hours ago at Mincha somehow expresses something different, not identical, even though the words are identical to what I said at Mincha, somehow it's different now. And he says that the milos are kiguf l'tfila, the words are like the body, v'hakavana kiruach. And the intent, the kavana, that which comes from the heart, is like the ruach, the spirit. Right? So we have the structure of tefillah, that is the words, that are, those are always the same, whether we're here in a different shul nearby, in a shul across the world, those words are the same, but the kavana, right, the kavana, the intent that we have, not only is that going to be different depending on where we are and what's inspiring us at that moment, if we were to daven here, or we were to daven Maariv at sunset on the beach somewhere, we'd have very different kavanos, even though we'd be saying the same thing. And it's that kavana that is the ruach, the spirit, and every person's spirit is different. And every person's spirit, every tefillah, can be different. We can find out something that's going on, whether to a family member, to a friend, somewhere in the world, and our spirits all of a sudden change. It can be enthusiasm that we didn't have before. We can have, it can be good news. And then our tefillos are really, we're flying high, and we say modim with extra kavana, and the spirit that we have is elated. Or Rachmana Litzlana can be difficult news. And then our spirit is very different. But the guf ha-tefillah, the milos, the words that we're saying are identical. But it's the ruach that goes hand in hand, because she is spalal ha-mispalal bilashono. And when a person davens, and the heart, our kavana, even in our mind, is somewhere else. We're thinking about something else. Somebody told us something right before davening. We're distracted by our phone buzzing. We're distracted by the weather outside, how cold or hot it is. When there's something else, and the kavana, the ruach, and the guf are not enmeshed together as it should be, tehiyat tefilaso kiguf below ruach, ukeklipa below lev, epnei shegufo nimtza velibo neadar be'ez tefilaso. So it's as though the guf below ruach. You have a body without a ruach, without a spirit. What happens when there is a body without a spirit? It's nothing. The person's neshama, they've passed on. They have no spirit. You can't have a body without a spirit. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave each person its Tzelem Elokim. There's a little bit of Elokam Mimahai, there's a neshama within us. And without that ruach, then the guf is nothing. It's empty, it's devoid of any holiness, it's devoid of the meaning that's necessary when we approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ukiklipa below lev, right? There's a shell. There's a shell. It looks like a you can watch people sometimes in the morning or at mincha or mar. You see somebody davening, and you can see that they're mouthing the words, but they're clearly not in sync with what's going on. Right? You ever find Friday night is usually the best time that you can actually see this in practice? And some of you are smiling because we might have done this ourselves, or we know somebody who has. Right, we're davening Ma'ariv on Shabbos, and we say Hakel HaKadosh and Shmona Esrei, and then what's the next word? Ata. Ata what? It's either Ata Chonin La'adam Das or Ata Kidashta for Shabbos. And it depends if you have the Ruach, if the Ruach that you've developed, that you've inspired through Lechadodi, through Yedid Nefesh, through Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos, if your Neshama is alive, is with you, is present on Shabbos, then you go to Ata Kidashta. But if it's Tfiloso Kegof below Ruach, or Keklipa below Lev, then what is it? Then a person is just sitting here. They haven't really, they're too tired to appreciate Shabbos. They're too tired to daven with Kavana. And they go like the Guf. The body's used to saying Ata Chonin La'adam Das. And it keeps going Hashivenu. And then it gets a Slach Lanu. Oh! And then you wake yourself up because you just pounded your chest. And you realize, no one else did that. This is the wrong tefillah. So you have the goof, and you're saying the right words for 6 out of 7 days of the week, but it's the wrong tefillah for Ma'ariv tonight. And that, sometimes we need, it's just like the shofar wakes up our neshama, so we need that slach lanu literally, we don't have kavana, and it wakes us up to remind us what our tefillah really should be. And because it's so difficult for the nefesh, for the spirit, lizkor kol zeh b'li chibur v'seder, right? As we just illustrated, it's difficult for the neshama, for the spirit to be able to be so connected, as it should be, ideally, to the guf, to the body, without any structure, right? If a person were to just sit down after sunset, or tonight, they'd come to shul at 7:30, and we have a group meditation session, and all of us come together. So it depends on where our spirits are. What happened to us since mincha? What happened to us in the past few hours? Somebody's spirit might be over there. Somebody's spirit might still be at work. And without the structure of bringing ourselves back, of anchoring our neshamos back to our guf, and reconnecting internally before we can come and approach God and say, this is what I am, this is why I thank you, this is what I need from you, this is what I've benefited from, and I appreciate that which you've done, and I'm looking forward to that which you will do in the future. Without bringing those two pieces together, then we have nothing to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because there's one piece of us that's here, it's like a person who's jet-lagged, right? Their body is here, but their neshama, their ruach, their spirit is somewhere over the Atlantic because they haven't been able to unify themselves. And so the chibur, the siddur provides a seder. The siddur itself provides order. It allows us to connect, to understand, to bring ourselves back. Kavu rabu sinu zuchorna levracha es ha'enyonim shetzrichim ro b'nei adam levakesh me'etz ha'elokim. Right? Everybody, we all have certain needs. And even if we might have different unique needs, depending on the time of day or the time of our lives, right? There are certain needs that everybody has. We all know somebody who's sick. We all know somebody who needs a little bit more parnasa. We all know somebody who needs Mashiach. In fact, we all need Mashiach. So we can gather together around that area of mutual need. The order in which we accept, the nefesh accepts facing Hashem, V'seder tefila zeh yiras hachnia shel hamispal elokim. All right, and the purpose of that, once you've now unified the nefesh and the guf together, what you're able to do is, okay, so here I am, and you realize how dependent you are. Hachna means to humble yourself in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the process of the Avodah Shebelev. Without that as a precursor to tefillah, without that process going on, right? When you walk through the double doors, we're supposed to kind of focus ourselves. Without that process, so we're not as humble, we don't connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as we should. And because the thought processes of mankind are constantly moving, right? In as therapists, we kind of call them clouds, right? And if there's a bad thought, okay, so it's a cloud. Kachalom yaof. It's a thought. It's a dream that we have. So dreams come, dreams go. We don't remember them. They're thoughts. They're clouds. Whatever it is, we're constantly thinking. How many of you have, were just distracted by the imagery and thinking back to Rosh Hashanah that I just, mentioned a couple of words, and that's how quick our thought processes are. Kasha la'adam l'sadar enyanei ha'tefila me'atzmo. And so to think that we can come to a shul, which is supposed to be the place that's the most conducive for tefillah, and we can come in and we'll be able to settle our minds to be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chazal recognized already back in the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, that we need help. Not everybody's on such a spiritual level. Not everybody's able to focus their minds in that way. And so Chazal said, you know what? We're going to help you out. We're going to give you a seder. We're going to give you a siddur. We're going to give you a structure that allows you to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the most ideal way. Because we know that how we think, acharei ha'pu'ulos nimshachim ha'levavos, as the Sefer HaChinuch says, the way we act has an impact on how we feel. When a person puts a smile on their face, even when they're not happy, it makes them feel a little bit more happy. Even though in their mind they say, I'm just doing it for show and I'm faking it, good. But 10 minutes later, if you still have that smile on your face, you're going to be even infinitesimally a little bit happier. And so when we put the machshava halecha sachar adibur, when we are able to talk about these things, so what am I talking about? Now we know, as we illustrated from the Friday night scenario, right? Sometimes our words don't always connect to our thoughts. But we hope that at some point, if we're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or we're talking about Rafu, or we're talking about Baruch Holin, Slach Lanu, that at some point that's really going to penetrate our thought processes, it's going to penetrate our neshamos. Halov shav ha'tfila b'milim v'inyanim. Right? There's some people, sometimes they say their tefillah, as Rabbeinu Bachya says, that the tefillah, the dibur, impacts the machshava, so sometimes it doesn't happen. Right? That guy on Friday night, so there's a famous joke that a person has to say tefillah sederech when they finish Shmona Esrei, because they were thinking about all sorts of things. And when they started, their minds were directed towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim in Yerushalayim. And then maybe they thought about something else, a vacation they went to in Australia. And then they had frequent flyer miles, so they came back to California. And then they thought, oh, that person in Florida, I wonder how they're doing. And the weather's much nicer there. And then finally they come back and they're in Elizabeth, and they don't know what's going on. So the Tefillah Sederach, that's not ideal. And so the siddur is supposed to bring us back. And a person davens with their eyes closed, open your eyes and focus on the siddur. That's what the siddur is there for. A person doesn't have kavana with their siddur, they're supposed to look up. That's why we have windows in the front of the shul. The windows are supposed to remind us of the kisei hakavod. So unfortunately, the sun shines, so we usually keep the shades closed. But if tefillah is a dialogue, right, and so Hashem sees that there's nobody there, there's an empty guf without a ruach, so why should he stick around to listen? Right? There's just somebody paying lip service. And so the siddur allows us to focus.
If somebody, let's say you didn't have the siddur, and the time of day to daven, if they were davening things that are meaningful to them at the time, they probably would have more kavana than just recognize the same words.
Mm-hmm.
Do you fulfill the obligation to daven if you're making up your own?
So you're saying in lieu of the tefillah? Or
if there were no sidurim, right, and we just knew we had to daven at certain times of the day, and people would come to say what's meaningful to them, that there might be more kavana than reading the same words every day.
That might be true.
But why can't you insert your own words? But I thought the idea of when you daven is that you can insert your own bakashos and your own ideas of what you, of how you want to connect to Hashem,
right,
what you're asking for.
But I think what Mrs. Rosenstein is asking is whether the structure of tefillah, sometimes it distracts us from even getting to those personal insertions. By the time we get to the opportunity in Shema Koleinu to add our own bakashos, we've gone through Birchas HaShachar, we've gone through Karbanos, we've gone through Psukei Dezimra and Birchas Kriya Shema and Shema, right? So by that point, it's like it's so far removed that this doesn't feel... I don't feel like anything here. I understand what you're saying. You're
okay.
Saying that you're looking forward to that opportunity,
that
and
that.
Others might take it, you know, just withdraw by the time they get to that point. So we spoke about that in the first shiur, about the value in that, in having this cognition, Shavisi Hashem L'Negdi Tamid, and the avoda is not just something that the only way to have kavana properly is by having a recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So that the avod, it's a heightened awareness when we walk into a base medrash or a base knesses, but that ultimately the avoda is, this is the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's been with me all day. Hashem has been with me in the car, He's been with me at work, He's been with me at home, and so it's just an opportunity to formally express everything that I've been thinking, right? But as many people find it very helpful, to be able to dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu all the time.
In the situation that I think that Meir was describing, if you didn't have a siddur and you just could not dive in the Tefillas Mincha or Tefillas Shacharis, isn't there something built in that if you skip a set davening, you can make it up somehow?
So there are two ways. Number one, there's an abbreviated form of Shmona Esrei that the Gemara in Brachos talks about called Havineinu, which is you take out some of the poetic parts of Shmona Esrei and you just consolidate it. If you're in a rush and there's extenuating circumstances, that would be one way to pack it all in, and you check all your boxes and we hit all the topics that we had to talk about and we're done. If you missed Tefillah entirely, is that what you're referring to? Is Tashlumin, right? Just like you can bring Karbanos later, so you can also daven later if it wasn't bemazed, if it wasn't intentional. If you decided, you know what, I didn't get the raise today, I'm protesting, I'm on strike from God, right? We can only do that, Rachman al-Latzan, when a person's an onain. Then you have license either to be angry and frustrated or you're busy preparing for a levaya. That's the only time that we say we're not davening. But if, you know, something happens, you get stuck in traffic or you're helping somebody else out and you realize, oh, I just missed Man Mincha, so you can daven Tashlumin for Maariv. I think what she was saying, though, if I understood you correctly, was the fact that maybe it's better not to have a sitter and just to have every person take personal responsibility about coming. What Rabbeinu Bachi was saying was that cover Rabbi Sinu Zerchon Levracha es ha'anyanim shetzrichim rov b'nei adam levakesh me'esu alokim. So at a certain point, Chazal did an analysis, right? The rabbis, they had a rabbinical convention, and they said, how's davening going in your community? And how's davening going in your community? And the Anshe Knesset HaGedola looked around, and they said to each other, and they kind of shrugged, not that well, right? We have different, we're spread out, we're in the galus, and people are all over the place, they're working harder than they've ever had to work before. We need to do something to change it. We need to improve the Klal Yisrael's capacity to focus in davening. And so they made a decision, you're right, for some people who really connect to tefillah and are able to focus on a consistent basis, they're going to lose out a little bit. And it's going to be a little harder for them to connect to the structure. But we hope that in the long run, there's a net gain here. And that's something, that's what leaders do. They make analyses and evaluations all the time with the greater good in mind.
And there is a gain because wherever you go in the world, there's a connection.
Right.
It's the same
Right? No matter what language you speak, if you're Ashkenaz, you daven from the Ashkenaz Siddur, and if you're Sfard or Edut HaMizrach, you daven from the Edut HaMizrach Siddur. And there's a familiarity with it. And so that's really helpful. And we discussed that, you know, in the past. Now, this is not a contradiction to what we learned last time. The Rambam said that we can't articulate our words. And Rabbeinu Bach is saying that it's hard for us to focus our minds that are always racing about other things. And to focus ourselves, Chazal drafted language. As the Gemara refers to. A coin, there's a phrase, there's something familiar. And that's why we needed a sitter. Now, one of the issues that we struggled with last time is that tefillah becomes a set text and we end up losing some of the spontaneity. And Reb Chaim Volozhiner explains that we shouldn't feel constrained, as you said a few moments ago, to the set text, but rather that we have license to add our own individual expression into the structure, the rigidity of tefillah. And he writes, V'hine ata, ba'avonoseinu harabim, avodoseinu hirak ha'tefillah. Right? We don't have karbanos anymore. This is the only way that we can do avoda, is avoda shebelev. Bimkom zevach u'mincha. Literally, in place of, at the same time as, we offer the karbanos in the morning and the karbanos in the afternoon and the meurim at night. The hadvarim omdim berumo shalolam. And these tefillos, they reach the highest heights in heaven. The chol teva v'teva, and every word is special. And Anshei Knesset HaGadola they weren't poets. They weren't people who just decided to create a structure because it worked for them. There was Ruach HaKodesh involved. They understood that every word has a special meaning, and every single word, Ola Limkom Gavoa Me'al Gavoa, it reaches up to the highest of heights, the Kisei HaKavod. Mekom HaKarbon Mamish. He says, just whatever point, the dam on the Mizbeach, and the Evarim that were offered, the limbs that were offered on the Mizbeach, the blood that was sprinkled on the Mizbeach, wherever that went, obviously not physically, but Kavayachal, whatever spiritual impact that Tfilos, the Karbanos had, when we say the words of Tfilos, when we say the words of the Karbanos, when we say Shemona Esrei, our words touch the same exact spot. That's very meaningful. To think, Neshama Parim Sefaseinu, that our mouths, Koach HaDibur, and that's not something that I think that we could reach if we didn't have the structure of the Siddur. If everybody was left to their own devices, so I think that an individual who's on a lower spiritual level, who connects as closely as they can, they're still not going to have that impact. Because these are words that were crafted by the Anshei Knesset HaGadola with Ruach HaKodesh, and they were able to discern this word at this spot has this impact. And you and I, we just don't know what that is. We can't relate to that, but they did. And so even if we don't have as much kavana, even if the ruach that we bring to the guf, hatfila, the spirit is lacking somewhat, there's still this incredible, incredibly powerful structure that Anshei Knesset HaGadola gifted to us that allows our tefillos to reach the very same spot as the karbanos. Even if our kavana one day is lacking. And so even if you feel like you don't understand every word of davening, just rely on their words. Because their words on their own are meaningful. V'chilo l'chinam, kuf dalad zakenim. It's not for nothing that 120, the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, 120 zakenim, v'mehem kama neviyim yisaduha, that they established tefillah. That they organized the requests, kol tzarkenu, all of our needs, refuos, tachaluenu, and that Hashem should heal our illnesses, b'lashon limudim, v'lamat tzarech le'neviim. Right? Why did it have to be neviim? Why couldn't they have gathered together the poets, or the people who were gifted in shira, in nigun? Everything that is intended to be included in whatever avoda is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they were able to understand that, and they packaged it up neatly in something that we call the Siddur. They hit every box that we need to get to, that a carbon was able to achieve. The whole ish Yisrael, kol echad mispal lefi havanaso, so that every person would be able to pray according to their understanding. because poetry is a mundane, secular, it's a skill. A person is good at writing something that sounds flowery and poetic and inspirational, but it lacks the ruach, right? You can have the guf, but they were able to combine, just to combine Rabbeinu Bachya with Rav Chaim Volozhiner, right? They understood the ruach shabo. They knew what the spirit meant within those words. I'll repeat it.
So David HaMelech is the synthesis of the poet and the Ruach HaKodesh.
So what Mark is saying is that David HaMelech is the synthesis of the Ruach and the Guf together. Right? Because he was on a level that he understood. He had Ruach HaKodesh, and he was before the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, and he aspired to build the Beis HaMikdash, where, you know, the most ideal form of Avodah could take place. And so he was able to write the words of Tehillim in a way that nobody else can. That even millennia later, a person opens up a Sefer Tehillim and there's just this connection. And if you were to open up a book of, I don't know, Shakespeare, you open up, you know, it's not the same.
The Siddur is full.
But that's later on. And part of the poetry in the Siddur, part of it is just the way it was written. A lot of the piyutim that we say, if you're referring to the piyutim versus the Pirkei Tehillim, so I remember hearing this from Rav Elchanan Adler, who's a Rosh Yeshiva in YU. He once gave a shir, I once heard a shir from him, on this topic of piyutim and the Yomim Noraim. And the piyutim on the Yomim Noraim are so difficult. You know, slichos especially are probably the most difficult. We break our teeth over them. To say them, we don't really understand what we're saying. And what he explained was that there was a certain time in Jewish history when Klal Yisrael was not able to learn Torah as much as they would have liked. And so they began to lose appreciation of Tanakh. And so to remind them, or to disguise the Limud HaTorah that they were doing, they would write the story out in prose, in poetry. And so that became piyutim, but really, if you look, let's say, in the bottom of the article Siddur, right, every couple of words there's another Maror Makom, there's another source of Tanakh. And, you know, if you were to open up a Tanakh and open up the Siddur and compare it, you'd spend hours, trying to understand what were they referring to. And part of the reason that piyut is so difficult for us, and why we don't say Yotzros anymore, and why people don't connect to Yotzros versus some other shuls in town, right? We don't have that familiarity. It doesn't mean anything to us. But they knew it. They had the ruach and the guf. They were quite talented. And that's almost like, and they were aspiring to replicate the form that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah was able to create in the context of tefillah.
Going down the line, how can we say, okay?
Rav Teitz asks me that every time I speak to him.
We don't like ushering, but we're not connecting to it. I don't know. This is where my mind is going. Like, how is it that we were able to take out, and by the way, you know, woman, what you're talking about, seriously, I don't even know. So, I'm just like, how did, at some point, whatever, not just our show, but I'm assuming it's many communities that take out these things. Okay, so I'm not speaking just from our community. How did that come out? Why just that? Why wasn't it Asher? Why wasn't it Rosh Hashanah? Like that, we don't connect to for whatever reason.
Right.
What made that special?
So the answer is that Piyut came later on. If you look at the historical progression, so Piyut comes after Ashrei was incorporated into Tefillah. But whereas the Siddur, as we have it today, you know, for the most part, is set. Right? We don't add tefillos, and that's why we have all this discussion about, let's say, Halal and Yom Ha'atzma'ot, or tefillos l'shlom hamdina, right? Prayers for the state of Israel, for the United States government, for any government, for the military. All these things are additions, and they undergo great rabbinic scrutiny as to whether it's appropriate to include them in the context of tefillah, which for the most part is set. But when you look at piyutim, so piyutim were added on by great rabbinic and literary scholars, however, they weren't universally accepted, right? Maybe it was only accepted in certain communities, in certain parts of Ashkenaz. So once it wasn't universally accepted, it becomes easier for it to be taken out or not be accepted in a new community. When Jews are moving from one country or province to another and they meet other people who didn't have that minhag of saying those piyutim, okay, so now we need to negotiate. Do we say it? Do we don't say it? And that's where things kind of evolve, right? If you go to the JEC, they say Yotzerot. I think... But even that's dwindling, and that's just a function of, you know, I guess what we call facts on the ground, which is unfortunate. But how did it stop here? Because people left and they made a decision. Now, was that a halachically sanctioned decision? Not clear to me. I don't know. Right? If there is a... This community is unique in having a minhag ha-makom, because there is a Rav Ha'ir, there's a Mara D'Asra, we should have a refuah shleima, and it's, you can't just take that away and say, okay, it's over, you know, we're not going to say it anymore. But that's how it happens, right? It's when people go from one place to another and they decide, we're creating new minhagim, we're creating a new shul, and you didn't say it. I never said it growing up where I came from. There are a lot of things I didn't say, but I'm not going to come in as the rav of the shul and change all the minhagim. That's not my place. You've been saying there's a minhag here. So that's how things kind of... You know, but nobody takes out Ashrei, right? We'll get to, by popular request, the very first year, that one of the questions that came up was, what do we say, what do we not say? So Ashrei is the very bare minimum, right? And that's not Piyut, again, that's going back to David HaMelech. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a different question. That the tefillos take the place of the korbanos to bring us close to Hashem. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, what did all... the other people do who are not inside the Beis HaMikdash? Did they have...
Good question. Right. So the question is, the people who brought the karbanos obviously were involved, and it was their karban, but it wasn't just individual karbanos that were brought on the Mizbeach. There were communal karbanos that everybody contributed towards. When we talk about the Machatzis HaShekel, so some of that money went to purchase karbanos, and all of that money is pooled together in the Beis HaMikdash treasury, and they withdraw as necessary to purchase animals for the purposes of sacrificing them on the Mizbeach, on the altar. And so everybody has a role, everybody has a part in that karban. So even though there was a rotation of Kohanim that were involved in bringing the karbanos on a weekly basis that the Gemara talks about, and there were Leviim that would circulate through, and any individual Yisrael who had to bring a karban for whatever reason, and their, you know, karban todah, chatas, asham, etc., etc., so those are extra. But there's always the karbanos hatzibur that were brought on a regular basis, and those are the tefillah, those are the karbanos after which our tefillos are modeled.
Okay, so the shoemaker sitting in his shop and the farmer out in the field, he doesn't know when this korban is being brought. Does he stop what he's doing? Like, how did they connect until they had these set tefillos?
So there was still, they knew that the karbanos were being brought on an ongoing basis. And as the Rambam talks about, there was still a chiyuv of, you know, of some type of tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day. Whether it just wasn't the formality of the sitter, but there was still an obligation to thank Hashem for what he's done, express our individual needs, and again, express appreciation and hoda'ah for what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. I just want to conclude. So since the tefillos were instituted by the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, right, there's never been another tefillah that can possibly reach the same level, which is why we don't tinker with the wording of it. There might be different nischaos, Ashkenaz, or Spartan, but for the most part, we're very, very reluctant to change a tefillah. We talk about Nachem, right? Nachem was... Do we add Nachem on Tisha B'Av? And then, well, what about the fact that Yerushalayim doesn't look the way it did after the Churban Beis HaMikdash? Yerushalayim is rebuilt. It's a beautiful metropolis today. But we're very reluctant to change the way the words that the Anshei Knesset HaGedola said for us. And so with this, we open the Siddur, and we start with Moda Ani. Moda Ani lefonecha melechai v'kayom shechazarta b'nishmasi. I thank Hashem before you. Melechai v'kayom, a king who's still... very ever present, Shechazarta bi nishmasi, who returned my neshama to me, bechemla, with mercy, rabba, much emunasacha, faith. So why is this? Why this is a strange tefillah. We don't start with the bracha. We don't say modim anachnu lach. We should just say modim right away. So the reality is in Eicha it says chadashim la bekarim rabba emunasecha, that every morning Hashem recreates us. We'd say yotzer or avari choshech. Hashem, you know, a person who's up all night. It's just that's the cycle. It's not the cycle. Hashem makes the moon go up. He makes the moon go. Well, the moon, quote unquote, disappear. He makes the sun go up. He makes the sun go down. Right, the sun's not going anywhere. But he makes the earth spin and he makes the seasons go and the wind and the dew and everything else. But when we wake up in the morning, we're not able to say the Shem Hashem yet, because there's a sense of tumah that exists. Why? For one of two reasons. Either, as we just said, Shechazarta b'nishmasi, Hashem returns our neshama to us. What does that mean? That means that overnight, when we're sleeping, we are that guf below ruach. We're the body without the spirit. The Gemara tells us that sleep is 1/60th of death, right? Because we're without a neshama. Now, when I learned that the first time when I was in high school, my friend sitting next to me said, "Wow, imagine how amazing death must be if sleep is 1/60th of it." But we don't have our neshama. We're not able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the most ideal sense. So we can't say Elokai Neshama, which is really what we should be saying, Shnasata bi Tahorai. But rather, Hashem removed our Neshama, and we acknowledge that He gave it back to us. And we're thankful for that. Because giving our Neshama back to us represents faith in us. That Hashem thinks, when I give back this Neshama to this man, to this woman, to this child, they're going to do something very worthwhile with it today. They're going to do something that in the history of the world has never existed, and the world depends on their avoda, what they do with their day. And so I'm going to give them another chance. Even if yesterday they had a terrible day, filled with averos, they got into arguments with everybody, and they stole, and they, just terrible. But still, today's a new day. Today's a new lease on life. And I have the opportunity to do tshuva. The Gemara talks about the fact that when a person sees a rasha, a person sees somebody do something wrong, right? The next day, do you remind them of what they did? No. Because we assume that before they went to sleep, they did tshuva. When they say hamapil, they did tshuva. They wake up the next morning, it's a new day, it's a new opportunity. They might not have done tshuva, but they have a chance to do it. And the potential, the opportunities are endless. What is chemla? Now it's mercy. So you return my soul with mercy, even though I don't really deserve it. Bechemla rabba, with great mercy, emunasecha. But that's really not the way it is. A person shouldn't say bechemla rabba, it's bechemla, with mercy, rabba emunasecha. It's the faith, Hashem has a lot of faith in me. And that's why He gave me back my neshama. Now, if you say that, and you have that kavana in the morning, it changes your whole day. It's not that Hashem has rachmanus on me, which He does, but it's that Hashem has faith in me. He has great faith. Rabba emunasecha. He has so much faith that He gives me back my neshama again. Some people, Rachman al-Tzlan, didn't have that chance. They didn't have the chance to get their neshama back, but I did. And what does that mean? What am I going to do with that opportunity? How do I maximize that potential?
That is a question that's bothering me. the victim involved. In. Uh-huh. Most of the tefillah.
I heard this idea first from Rabbi J.J. Schachter. Yeah. So that was.
Yeah. No, most of the tefillah, the language is from a masculine point of view, or except we say shosono, whatever, we change that. Can a woman change the modani to moda'ani? Because moda'ani is not.
Yeah. Really, I've seen Siddurim where it does say moda or moda.
I have
it.
It does say
moda. Yeah.
That's how I grew up. I never saw it. Moda.
I have it.
Yeah. And that's not changing the matzbeya. It's the same word. It's just changing the diktuk of it. And it's a personal expression, right? There's no.
Don't feel comfortable saying
modeh. Uh huh. Yesh al mi lismoch to say modeh. That there are certainly those to rely on. So really, we should be starting with Elokai Neshama. but it includes Hashem's name. We haven't yet washed Netilas Sedayim to remove the Tumah that exists, this spiritual impurity that results from the Guf Bali Ruach, the Guf Bali Neshama in the middle of the night. So it's interesting to note that we first establish a relationship of Melech Chai V'Kayam. Hashem is his king. It's not Avinu. It's a Melech. Right? What is the relationship between an Eved and a Melech? Subservient. Dependent. The Melech provides whatever we need. The Master provides what we need. And it's only because Hashem returned our Neshama that we're able to continue to function as the Eved. And we acknowledge that that is the nature of the relationship first and foremost. Right? So that we're grounded in, okay, what am I going to do today? It's not whatever I want. My life, my day, has to fit within the purview of my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a Melech. And I'm his Eved. Everything I do has to fit within that context. And so we thank Hashem for bathing our neshama in a sense of tara, of kedusha, and giving it back to us. And just as we trust a doctor to, if a person, Rachmana Litzlan, needs to have a heart transplant or bypass, right? They stop the artery, the blood does stop circulating through the heart, it's detoured into a machine and goes back into the body. So if we trust a doctor to do that medically, so basically what we're doing is when we lay down at night, and when we wake up in the morning, we're acknowledging that Hashem takes our neshama from us and He gives it back. So there's some people who are too nervous about work and they wake up in the middle of the night and they're checking their email on their phone, which is under their pillow or next to their bed, and it's the first thing that they do in the morning before they even say Moda Ani. So Rabbi Tversky is a mashal from the Maggid of Chernobyl, who spoke about a businessman who would stop by his store on his way to shul to make sure that everything was in order. And then after he finished davening, he'd come back and he'd start his day at work. And the Maggid would say to him, I don't understand. You trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give you back your neshama, you don't trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu that your business is going to be okay? You can't wait a half hour? Which one is more incredible? The fact that your business is still standing, or the fact that your neshama is back in your body? Clearly, one is more impressive. So if you have that emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that hakara, that recognition that Hashem has given that to you, your work can wait. Check your email after you finish davening. It's a way of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the first connection, their halachos and Shulchan Aruch, about what you can and cannot do before davening, because we want to create that immediate relationship and solidify that relationship at the very beginning of the day, to create that context. And if you start with various things, so you're going to be distracted by the time you get to shul, and it's not going to facilitate that connection that we're supposed to have. Second, Moda Ani is an exercise in our expression of Hakaras HaTov, of gratitude. It's an exercise in cultivating an attitude of gratitude, as we like to say. But it's hard for us to be thankful, because being thankful means that we're dependent on somebody, that somebody gave us something that we needed and that we were able to receive. But it also enhances our interpersonal relationships as well. Right? Did Hashem do anything for us? We don't think about it. When we wake up in the morning, it's another day. Hashem gave me my neshama yesterday also, and the day before that, and the day before that. We almost take it for granted. But if we're able to break down into these tiny little pieces, the fact that Hashem gave us our neshama back, and therefore I have an obligation to express thanks and gratitude, then how is that going to impact how I perceive the world around me? Then if somebody does something small that's positive, that is going to maybe outweigh the negative that they do towards me, because I have Hakaras HaTov. I'm always looking for opportunities to express my thanks and appreciation. That in turn can result in a much happier existence, because we realize that there's a lot of good around us, and if we're looking for the positive, okay, Hashem gave me my neshama back. That's a big deal. And we say a whole tefillah for that. Without Moda Ani, right, we'd really be no different from the Dor HaFlaga that just decided, oh, we don't need God. We'll fight Him if we need to, but we'll just build a tower. We don't need HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so at the very beginning of the day, we recognize, no, we do need HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's the one who gave us Chiyus. He gave us life. He gave us the Ruach, the Spirit, that allows us to be who we are, me, not you, and you, not you, and every person in their own role in this world. After we wash Netilas Yadayim, this will conclude. We have the first bracha of the day. Hashem sanctifies us. Rav Shwam points out that the bracha could have been Baruch Atah Hashem Shetzivanu Al Netilas Yadayim. Hashem commanded us, right? We're Tamei. Either it's Machlokas Rishonim between the Rosh and the Rashba. Is it because that our neshamas left us and it creates a sense of spiritual impurity? Or is it because when we're asleep, we're not as aware of where our hands, what parts of our bodies our hands touch? And the halacha is that if we touch a part of our body that's normally covered, we'd need to wash our hands. So we assume between getting undressed in the evening, going to sleep at night, getting dressed in the morning, our hands have come in contact with some part of our body that we don't normally touch, and so therefore we have to wash our hands. So as we wash our hands and then recite that bracha, so it should say we're commanded, right? We can't start the formal tfilos that we were talking about earlier without this bracha. But instead it says, Hashir kedishanu b'mitzvosav, that Hashem sanctifies us through these mitzvos. So every person is created b'tzelem Elokim, so that we have a level of kedusha beyond the animal kingdom. But beyond that general tzelem Elokim that is shared by all of humanity, B'nai Yisrael weren't just created b'tzelem Elokim, we were created b'kedushas haguf, with the holiness of our body. It's not just a regular body, it's a Jewish body. There's a kedusha to it. And so, going back to the very first mitzvah of Bris Milah that men are able to perform with their body, there's a kedusha, there's a holiness that is lacking in the rest of humanity. And when we recite this bracha, the very first bracha of the day. So the first thing we say Moda Ani, we thank Hashem. The second thing we do is we acknowledge and we appreciate our Jewishness, that which distinguishes us, that which elevates us from the rest of the world. So first we thank God, and then we acknowledge our relationship vis-a-vis humanity. And so washing our hands doesn't just take off the dirt. It doesn't just remove the tumah, but it elevates the rest of our hands, and by extension from our hands throughout the rest of our body, that now our hands are our hands of Kedusha, and our feet, which are walking to shul, are feet of Kedusha, and our heart is pumping for Kedusha. Our whole body is filled with Kedusha once again to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, I said before that I was going to conclude. I really will conclude. I put this out of order in my notes, I apologize. When we start with Baruch, so we commonly translate that as bless, right? I bless Hashem. Who here feels comfortable blessing Hashem? Now that we have this appreciation of what He does for us, it's presumptuous. Oh God, I bless you. Thank you for returning my neshama. You think Hashem needs your blessing? What does my blessing mean anyway? So the Avud Raham agrees. It is presumptuous of you. That's not what it means, says the Avud Raham. It's Baruch Atah means that Hashem is the Mekor HaBracha. He is the source of blessing. And so what we're doing when we say a bracha, we acknowledge Hashem is the source of all blessing in the world, and we'd like it to increase. Now says Rosh Shimon Schwab, but what about when we say V'anachnu Nevarech Ka, and we, Hashem is the source of blessing, the name of God? How do we understand that? Or Avarcha es Hashem, that we bless, what we used to understand was we bless Hashem, but now, according to this understanding of the Avud Raham, we're saying that Hashem, the source of blessing is God. It doesn't seem to fit very well. So instead, Rav Schwab explains that Baruch means to increase, a riboy. You rearrange the words, and he says, and it's based on a pasuk, "Uvirach es lachamecha v'asmei mecha," that Hashem will increase your bread and your water. Beirach, it's not that just that Hashem blesses our water, or that Hashem is the source of our bread and of our water, but says Rav Schwab, it means that Hashem will increase, right? We need bread and water to sustain us, to live on. And so we hope that Hashem's presence and the recognition of Hashem, His name, His existence in this world is increased. Just as we say, Yiskadel v'yiskadei Shemei Rabbah, what are we responding? Hey Shemei Rabbah, Mevarach, Le'olam Yolmei Olmayah. It's not that Hashem's name should be blessed, but that this greatness, the exaltedness of God should be great, should be greater. That we aspire that at a certain point, as we say on Rosh Hashanah, or no, not on Rosh Hashanah, in Aleinu, that all the creations of the world should bow before Hashem out of a recognition of His existence. And this fits nicely with a Gemara in Brachos that Yossi Green made famous. It's called Tanya. I think it's on Dav Zayin Amud Aleph. When Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol walks into the Beis Hamikdash, the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, and he has this perplexing conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Hashem says, Barcheni, bless me. What does that mean? And so he says, Yihiratzon Lofanecha, Sheyichbishu Rachamecha, as Kascha, that you should can't conquer your anger against mankind, V'yagolu Rachamecha Amidosecha, and that your Rachamim, your mercy, should overcome the other Midos. And so it's this bracha that we should be able to acknowledge, and Hashem's presence should be greater. Then we go to Atah, right? Baruch, as we understood it, Atah is now we're directly towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, a little bit presumptuous. We're talking right to Him. And if we have this understanding of what Atah is in every bracha, and maybe certainly in the context of davening in a shul, it's more difficult, because we have to keep up with the tzibur. But if you're davening Shmona Esrei, you're making a bracha sanen, and you're making a bracha on a drink or on a food, so you can slow down a little bit. Atah, Hashem, you made this. You allowed this to be created for me to enjoy. And that creates a certain closeness, the intimacy, having Hashem, as you said, we said before, of talking to Hashem throughout the day. That bracha can be an opportunity to bring Hashem into wherever you are. I was and with this kavana, we were at work yesterday. There was a presentation on a topic that is not appropriate for a base medrash, but it is appropriate for a professional setting in the area that I'm working. But I didn't feel comfortable making a bracha on the clementine that I wanted to eat, because the topic of what was being discussed was too mentally distracting. Right? So where we are, who's around us, what are we hearing when we make a bracha? If we're focused on the bracha and the dialogue that that allows with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then we want to make sure that the environment that we're in, v'hayu machanecha kadosh, that our... Where are we? We can't just say a bracha. We can't just say Hashem's name in a bathroom. We want to make sure that we're in a wholesome environment. And that allows us to feel like we're talking to God. Now, my Rebbe Rav Kahn once said, when you get to that point, that Hashem is the Hayahovah V'yiyah, that I appreciate everything Hashem can do, we can't stay there. It's actually too overwhelming. There's little me all of my flaws, and I'm now talking directly to God. And so what we do is we take a step back. And after Hashem, what's the next word? Elokeinu. We go from first person, Atah you, to Elokeinu. I can't have that relationship with HaKadosh. It's too much. I'm not on that level. I'm not Roy. And so we say, Elokeinu Hashem, Takef Bala Icholos, Tubala Kochos Kulam. Collectively, we acknowledge we, because of our history, Hashem can do anything He wants. And then we get into the various brachos, whatever they may be, Birchas Anen and Birchas HaShachar, but that's the framework of the brachos of tefillah at the very beginning. Any questions?
It's really more of a tangent, but on the washing the hands. So I learned, and I learned that when you go to the restroom, you would wash megalasser when you come out. There are people who were like, why do you do that? And I'm like, well, for the same reason we just said, because if your hands are going to touch people's parts that are normally covered, you would wash your hands. So that's my answer. But not everybody's okay with that, because, I mean, also when I went to camp, like, we were always told after swimming, you had to wash megalasser. When you get your hair cut, you wash megalasser.
Cut your nails.
So, and then when you brought that up, I said, so, okay, so there's a premise of something that I'm not pulling this out of a hat.
Right.
So I'm curious, like, why is there, this seems to be this divide, and machlokes, so some say that, yes, that you should.
Because it's not quite as much as having your neshama removed. There's a qualitative difference between having a guf below neshama and coming in contact with something. It's not the same level of tuma, and so therefore it doesn't require the same amount of washing.
But yet that, so do I have, is there a premise of, like, I definitely learned in school that we had to wash nickel box after using the restroom, like, for sure.
If you can, that's great.
Also, and also for the first time we changed our bathing suit, same idea.
Right.
We did for cutting nails also.
Right, because there's... Right. But strictly speaking, that's not necessary. But if you could, you know, if that's your minhag, then go for it, do it. Right? There's some that even wash 8 times. The Vilna Gaon had the minhag of washing 8, then his negel vasker was 8 times, because the 6th only removes the tuma and the zuama. The washing one more time removes the water that is itself impure.
Okay.
It's great to be so much. Yes. He was sitting right next to me talking about things that I don't discuss in public.
But, like, saying the bracha, don't you think it would, like, you know, put an element of holiness into the room, you know?
Absolutely. But I was just concerned in that moment that my mind was not going to be able to focus in the way that I should ideally, right? I'm not starving. I don't need the clementine right now. So maybe it's better for me to let him continue talking about something else rather than... Meaning, if we understand our relationship with Hashem, that every moment of our day is a form of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just different people serve Hashem in different ways, so then my presence... Being Mekadesh Shem Shemayim as an Orthodox person who's Shomer Torah Mitzvos in a mixed setting, let's say, although it's mostly Orthodox Jews, but there's certainly mixed company, I hope that that itself is able to add an element of Kedusha to it. And even the way we discuss topics that are not appropriate for a base medrash is also important. But personally, in my trying to improve my own tefillos in the course of preparing these shiurim and sharing it with you, I wanted to, you know, I was just sharing an example that was helpful for me, that might, you know, you might be able to relate to.